Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Sandy Springs, Georgia. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating Atlanta's heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of Atlanta's elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. It's April 21st. Welcome to Ujiria Radio. This is Brad Culp, and I've got Sam Grass and Lee Cantor in the studio with me this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. How are you today, Brad?
I'm doing well.
And everything y'all? Okay? Good weekend?
Everything's good. It's a good weekend. Hard to complain. We have a great show this morning. It's a continuation from last week. We've been talking about managing and planning for the cost of long-term care. And we have back in the studio with us this morning Wally Kellerman and Dan Munster. Good morning.
Good morning.
We've got a very light trivia day this morning, so we're going to talk about some birthdays and some anniversaries of death, and then we're going to move right into it. 1926, Queen Elizabeth II was born. She is 84 years old today, and she's been on the throne of England for 58 years. It's a long time.
Wow. Is that a record?
It's getting close, I think, 2 years. 2012 is the date when she will set the record. So.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
A big Ujiria party.
Big Ujiria party. 100 years ago today, Mark Twain died, and today is Rome's birthday. Not sure what the original date was, but we're going to just move on because, like I said, it was a light trivia day today. So
it usually is a light trivia day.
Even when it isn't.
That's right.
Well, we would be talking about the NHL playoffs, but we've already established the fact that Atlanta wasn't in it to start with, so they're still not in it. So, well, let's get into this then. We kind of wrapped up last week starting to talk a little bit about the Georgia Partnership Program and how that is a public-private partnership in Georgia to give private insurance companies an opportunity to participate in long-term care along with the state of Georgia. And so that's kind of where we're going to start. But before we do that, I just want to welcome Wally back into the studio. This is actually the third time you've been with us. But just give us a brief background on your practice, and let's start there.
Thank you, Lee and Sam and Brad, for inviting me back. The last time that I spoke with you, I told you that I was a retired RN, and I wanted to become a physician, but I just waited a little bit too long. And when they ended the nurse practitioner program under Reagan, I said, well, now what the heck am I going to do with the rest of my life? And I really wasn't sure that I wanted to be a lawyer, but it turned out that the New York State Nurses Association kind of twisted my arm and said, Wally, we really do need nurses in the legal profession. So I went to law school outside of Boston, 1985 to 1888. Having come from the medical model, that wasn't good enough, so I came down here to Dear Emory and took an advanced degree, and I do have an LLM, and that is in litigation. And, of course, as a litigator, I never expected to be doing what I'm doing today. In 1993, I opened my practice, and all two elders in the state called me, and I went out looking for elders. I mean, I went out looking for elder law attorneys, having come from New York State, and I couldn't find any. There was nothing in the phone book. I was trying to refer people to long-term care insurance agents. Nobody knew what the heck I was talking about. Well, I was still working as a nurse at Emory, and I said, well, you know, I like elders, and I'm real comfortable with going in a nursing home or a hospital. And so I said, I literally fell into the practice, and I've been doing it ever since 1994. My practice is really more broad-based than most elder law attorneys. We have a lot of attorneys that do very specialized areas. I do a lot of litigation. I do medical mal and personal injury. I also do guardianships and probate. I also do asset protection planning, and I'm also licensed as a life and health insurance agent, and my colleague here, Dan Munster, who, welcome back, Dan, is also licensed in the long-term care.
Are there more now? More of you? Elder law people?
That are licensed? Yeah. I'm aware of one other in our group.
Wow.
I'm just, and perhaps I could speak about that briefly. We decided to get into it because we were realizing that who better than an elder law attorney to try to educate the boomers, the ageless generation that's never going to get old, never going to get sick, and certainly never going to die, that we needed to really start educating the public. And we felt it gave us credibility to have that license and to be able to begin to educate the public.
That's a good place to move right into the topic and speak briefly and review for our listeners, Wally, the Georgia Partnership Program, Long-Term Care Partnership Program, and how it is or can be an integral part in planning for the financing and delivery of long-term care benefits.
Hopefully, our listeners listened to last week's program, and if you have not, I would recommend that you do go back and listen to that on the podcast. We have Dan Munster in the studio with us, and I am proud to say that he's a wonderful colleague, and he was intimately involved getting the Georgia Partnership Long-Term Care Insurance Program up and running in this state. We talked at length about asset protection planning and the Medicaid program, and we also talked at that time about estate recovery. And what our elders want, basically, is to be able to protect their assets as much as possible. And if they've not planned ahead and have to use Medicaid, there is a very good chance that they will have estate recovery liens against their property, their real estate, and will not be able to then pass on assets. The Long-Term Care Insurance Partnership Program is designed to allow for people to be covered under long-term care insurance and protect assets and put estate recovery, hopefully, on the back burner.
Wally, repeat exactly what you said, because that's where people, you're going to lose them. Claire, just say it again, that the asset, the Georgia Partnership Program allows the individuals to protect
assets from estate recovery. And as I said, if they go back and review the program last week, a lot of the technical information that they probably are thinking, okay, blah, 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 I got all these questions. Start from today, and you will learn a lot more about how we can protect the assets and make the quality of life, which is what we're trying to do for our elder generation, especially us boomers, you three, get your long-term care insurance, your quality of life can be sustained.
And still qualify for Medicaid benefits. Protect assets, avoid state recovery, and still qualify for Medicaid benefits. Those are the three issues I think we need.
Yes, and Dan, put your stamp on that, okay?
Well, I would definitely agree with everything that's been said. I would just want to expand and essentially create one more, I guess, and that is that to me, my goal, and I know this is Wally's goal and the goal of anybody who works in this area in the aging community, regardless of what they do, and that is to preserve the highest possible quality of life for the client in the least restrictive setting possible. And so the reason that I like the idea of all long-term care insurance, in addition to the fact that long-term care partnership program policies, you know, fit into this overall concept, is the idea that it preserves people's ability to stay home. It preserves their ability to stay together with a spouse. It preserves their ability to pay privately for assisted living if necessary. And so the idea of having any long-term care insurance is to enhance the quality of life at the end of life. The bonus of a long-term care partnership program policy is that if you've had the foresight to buy one and you've had the need to exhaust it, then you can subsequently file for Medicaid eligibility, and whatever your policy was worth, you now have an asset limit under Medicaid that much higher, and those dollars which are protected through that partnership program policy are not subject to estate recovery. So it's a win-win for the family, for the state's Medicaid program, for the insurance companies who are obviously making money off of these or they wouldn't sell them. So it's basically a win-win-win situation.
In some ways, too, I think certainly one of the objections to buying a long-term care policy would be, I can't afford it.
Right, and I think we should get into that. I would suggest we start, back in what is long-term care, and then kind of build up to responding, because that is like the number one objection. Yeah. But unless you have some of this other basic information,
sure,
it's difficult to answer that question.
And let me take one further step back, and that is, having said that, with that objection, looking at this Georgia partnership program, in some ways you could make the argument you can't afford not to buy long-term care if you think at some point you might want to take advantage of Medicaid, or you might be able to take advantage of Medicaid because of the estate recovery. And if we could just by way of review just talk about estate recovery for a minute, because I know that's only been a factor in Georgia for a year or two. So can you just describe what is estate recovery and when does it kick in?
Sure, Brad. Estate recovery was actually something that various, at least a few states, were doing before 1993. In 1993, Congress passed a law that basically said all states were supposed to do it. Between 1993 and 2004, Georgia chose not to do it. In 2004, the governor decided we were going to do it, and it took three additional years to go through various versions of regulations to eventually define how we were going to do it here in Georgia. So starting in 2007 was the first point at which any estates were paying any money back. Estate recovery is conceptually logical, but on a national basis hasn't really proved to be that productive. The concept is essentially, you're allowed to qualify for Medicaid while owning certain exempt property, with the understanding, and there's a reason behind all of the exempt property, for example, the home place. If somebody's in a nursing home, but they may be able to go home at some point, but they've been forced to sell their home, then they have nowhere to go, as an example. So all of those things that people are permitted to own, which are exempt, if they are part of their estate following their death, then estate recovery essentially says we're going to go and get our state money back out of the estate and get reimbursed. On a national basis, the best possible recovery percentage rate is only in the single digits, 8 or 9% of dollars spent. There are a lot of states that are actually losing money because of the administrative overhead in terms of actually recovering money. So that's the general idea of how estate recovery works. Georgia has 159 counties. And so we have a great deal of legwork and effort, and so I'd love to see statistics. I haven't seen any as to whether or not our program is actually making money.
Okay. Let me throw out a statistic in regards to long-term care and the need for preparing for this event. And that is that the lifetime probability of becoming disabled in at least two ADLs, activities of daily living, or being cognitively impaired, is 68%. Now, we have disability programs out there for the professional, and the statistics for that is somewhere around 30 to 33% of those professionals will use their disability benefits. Long-term care is twice. So now, which is more important? So I throw that out there to look at Wally and say, take that and run with it, Wally. Tell us what long-term care is. Tell us, use that as a springboard to start the discussion about it.
Well, I like the fact that you're using some statistics here, because I think it's really, really important. You know, we are living longer. in this generation, the current elders, I'm seeing more and more and more people over the age of 80. I'm seeing them over the age of 85. And they're still, some of them are still in pretty good health. According to the stats that have been put together by AARP and their Policy Institute, are 85 and year olders are going to grow by 91% by 2030. So that is only 20 years from now. The whole business of long-term care is the notion of custodial care, where even though you may still be healthy, and I say that with, as a nurse, you know, with some reservation, but you basically are, you know, everything is still clicking along pretty well. What's happening is more and more of our elders are becoming elder and frail, and they cannot do for themselves 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 ADLs or activities of daily living. Mm-hmm. And
I'm sorry, right there. Tell us what these AD activities of daily living
are.
Well,
they are bathing, dressing, feeding, ability to toilet. That's the kind of ADLs that we are looking at for long-term care insurance or long-term care insurance needs.
Okay. And what is the typical qualifying event for a long-term care policy to provide benefits?
Well, if you're cognitively impaired, you just need that one. Otherwise, it's going to be two activities of daily living that you cannot do. And that actually does require that be established not only by a physician, but in some of these long-term care by a nurse or by, you know, an application, a form that has to be, you know, filled in. In other words, it's you just can't call them up and say we can't do two activities of daily living. That all has to be established.
Right.
But cognitive impairment kicks in right away.
Okay.
And as we age, we have more of these that we cannot do. Now, interestingly, the statistics are showing that we have a lot of people at home in Georgia caring for their loved ones. Currently, that is valued at some number of billions of dollars, mm-hmm. like 13 already.
Mm-hmm.
So we are already seeing a tremendous need for long-term care and for it to be paid for. And we're leaving it up to the state Medicaid program often because our families are broke after a year mm-hmm. of paying for private care.
Well, and there's a startling statistic that goes along with that, and I can't tell you the origination of that statistic at the moment because it's not in front of me. But today there are 11 people on average in a person's social network that are available to take care of an aging individual. And so it's an 11-to-1 ratio. In the next 20 years, that 11-to-1 ratio goes to 4-to-1.
The other thing that I think is interesting that people need to get a handle around and put their arms around is that the statistics appear to be around, in today's dollars, $255 per individual for care from the first sitter that comes in to kind of keep an eye on mom all the way to the end when a person dies.
That's an average.
That's an average. And as I say, because they're living longer, mm-hmm. this could be over a period of a minimum of 10 years.
$255,000.
About $255,000.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And where's it going to come from?
Yeah. Wally, you briefly touched upon those, what we call those qualifying events, mm-hmm. where a long-term care policy would provide benefits and services. Tell us what environments that those benefits can be delivered, that services can be delivered.
The policies nowadays do have home care, assisted living, nursing home care, occasionally respite care. There's some other goodies that get built in as well, you know, some certain amount of allowance for a home to be made handicap ready, a certain amount of education. There's actually a couple of policies that allows for a family member to be trained, a small allowance. So it depends on how much is, you know, purchase, but there are a lot of benefits that are built in. But the goal is to, nowadays, is because this is what Georgia residents want, is to stay in their own home. And what we find is without the ability to pay for that, they end up in a setting, and they end up having one, perhaps mom at home, dad's in the nursing home, and now they're paying for two different residences. And, of course, that's financially prohibitive.
Discuss with our with us and inform our clients, when you're looking for long-term care policies, is there a criteria that you would recommend someone to use to evaluate these types of policies?
Yes, there is the Standard and Poor. There's a Best. There's several of them. You're looking for a policy that is an minimum of an A-rated policy, and those top policies, you can go on any website and get those rated policies. The goal here is to make sure that the company that you purchase the policy from will still be in business 30 years from now. One of the things that's sad is we've had a couple of high-risk companies that have now been taken over by the state of Georgia, and I don't know where that's going to leave all those people who are still paying. I'm not going to name them on the air, but you know what happens to the folks that have been paying all these years and now they've come under the state coverage? Will they even get what they've paid for? Right. It's questionable.
Can I make a comment? I do think it's important, as long as we're going to shine a spotlight on the let's say, the past of the long-term care insurance industry, I think it's important to also clarify that over, the last 5 years or so, the industry has really, because of market forces, shaken itself out. And so a lot of the companies who in the 90s wanted to get into this industry, gobble up market share, they underpriced their products. They also typically assumed lapse rates that were not accurate, and as a result, a lot of these companies had people making claims that they couldn't afford to pay. That has changed dramatically, and in the present, there are a handful of companies, let's say less than 10, that own the majority of the market share, and those companies typically all do have very strong ratings. And those companies very rarely have we can talk about it at some point, the concept of premium increases is something that people are very concerned about in terms of affording the cost. The point you made before that you can't afford not to have this insurance is, to me, it's a no-brainer considering a husband and wife who are in good health and 50 years old can pay for several years worth of premiums for what it costs for one person for 1 month in a nursing home.
When I do lectures, I often will be in an assisted living where the elder, no longer would qualify. And the family member will often say, they're just too expensive for us. And then I look at the elders in the room and I say, ladies and gentlemen, residents, if you had your choice, which would you rather pay? And I use a high number. I tell them, it isn't actually this costly, but it's about this for you to pay, be here. Which would you rather do, pay $5,000 a year or $5,000 a month?
And Wally, you know this story. We've talked about this from a personal standpoint. And my parents, when they were in their early 80s, I took a long-term care policy, a partnership couple policy to them. The cost was somewhere around $6,000 a year. They said the same thing, too expensive. My mother, we go down the road several years. My mother dies, and the day after the funeral, we started long-term care for my father. It lasted 5 years at a tune of somewhere around, $30,000 to $40,000 a year. Do the math. $6,000 a year for 5 years, $30,000 in premiums we would have paid for the policy, and we would have saved this estate somewhere between $250,000, maybe $300,000. Those are very, very round general numbers. But the issue is a cut between a couple at some point, one of those spouses in the couple is going to need long-term care.
At what age should a family consider getting this?
I suggest they start thinking about it in their 40s. First of all, they're going to be healthy. Second of all, they're probably going to get a wonderful preferred rate. Thirdly, there's a nice 5% compound. Can you imagine taking a small amount of coffee money and putting that, and then when you get a little bit more money, you could upgrade it, but you get that 5% compounding going, and you're going to have a nice pocket of change at the end of the time. And so I like to see people start thinking about it in their 40s. The average age right now is 61, but I have 50-year-olds I can't buy it for because they're already
right.
They can't qualify because they have health problems.
I'm going to throw you to a curveball.
Okay.
It will be a slow one, so I hope I won't. But let's talk about the financing of long-term care through what is commonly called an HSA, health savings account. And I know there is a tax advantage to doing it that way. Can you speak to that?
I can tell you right now that the current health reform bill is doing all it can to get rid of these.
Well,
and so therefore, I don't want to
okay.
waste our valuable time here today trying to do that. But I would like to talk about, how do we pay for this
okay.
long-term care insurance? You know, what are our options? And, you know, do you have to have the most expensive policy? Even if you bought a very low-priced daily rate of $75 a day, that would, you do the math, you're going to be looking at about $1,500 a month. That would help. In other words, you don't have to buy the entire block of care if you'll just do something to support what you're already saving for if you feel that this is more than you can really afford. It's the idea that you get started, and as long as – and now that cost that you've been quoted at a younger age stays in place until there is across-the-board class raise. Now, I just met with an elder, and she's had her long-term care insurance for 12 years. She's a very good one. Very, very good one. And she's had her first class raise. Now, she is like 84.
Hmm.
So what I'm saying, and now she's been 5% compounding all this time. So she has a nice. And so in terms of the cost, you can buy something that's $100 to $150 a day. And depending on your age and whether or not you get a preferred rate, you will then be able to be given by your agent, you know, what that cost will be. If you buy it for a year, do a lump sum, it's less money. If you cannot do that and you need to do it every month, it's a little bit more.
Yeah.
But there are a variety of ways to pay for it.
I'd like to expand on what she was talking a second ago about the class raise, because this ties in with the fear that Brad raised, where people feel like they can't afford it, both in the present and in the future. And that is the fear that if somebody buys a policy and then they have a health concern, that the insurance company is
right.
going to raise their rates.
Right.
And so it's critical that folks understand that what she means when she says class raise is that an insurance company cannot raise an individual's rate because their health changed. What the insurance company is allowed to do, and again, this is much more rare nowadays with the bigger, more reputable companies who actually have priced their products accurately or more accurately, what that insurance company is permitted to do is to go to the state insurance commissioner and say, we're losing money on an entire class. Everybody from 50 to 54 years old, we want to raise all their rates because it turns out we underpriced that market and we're losing money, and you don't want insurance companies providing good insurance in your state to go out of business, and so we ask for permission to raise rates 7% on that class. That's rare. It does happen. But what can't happen is individual increases on individual people after they're diagnosed with Alzheimer's or something like that. If they wait too long, they don't get the insurance, and then they get that diagnosis, they're never going to get the insurance.
Yeah,
and so
right.
that's why getting
industry,
it earlier
you call
is better.
That selective underwriting. You cannot selectively underwrite
exactly.
a policy.
Exactly.
Wally, long-term care insurance is not well known. It's not a hot topic today. Obviously, healthcare is, but long-term care isn't. I believe it will be as great a financial crisis in this nation 10, 15 years from now. Why isn't it being talked about?
Well, I have been observing, and I've noticed Dan, when we talked, has observed it also. It's the baby boomers we're trying to get to. They can still qualify, and they are many of them are still in good health. But what I'm observing is they're raising their kids, and the kids are all coming back home, and they got 30-year-old kids at home. They're also taking care of their parents, and they're working two jobs, and as I said, this ageless generation is never going to get sick, even though they know better intellectually. They simply are not even doing their powers of attorneys, their advance directives, and their wills. I mean, they're not really taking care of themselves legally and barely taking care of themselves health-wise, although they may go to the gym or run. They're just in denial that they are ever going to need it. And I think that has been the biggest, difficulty.
And even if they do, it's the furthest out on the horizon.
Right.
And so if you talk with anybody who works in this industry, what they'll tell you is people are looking at, especially in this economy, they're looking at their bills in order of priority. And when they get down to insurance, if they're a business owner, they're paying for their own health insurance through the nose. Eventually, they're talking about life insurance. They're talking about maybe disability insurance. All the way down at the very bottom is long-term care insurance. And that's unfortunate, because the reality is that for most people, they're not going to be disabled early in life.
Right.
That's rare. On the other hand, the odds are much greater they're going to need long-term care at the end of life. And the statistics show, and if you ask financial planners, they'll tell you that it's the number one biggest mistake for the average middle class or blue collar American that they've not accounted for in terms of their overall estate plan is how are they going to finance the cost of long-term care?
Well, I can tell you, first of all, you've described me exactly, and that is exactly the situation I'm in. Wally knows this. We've had this discussion. The worry, though, is, at least, I'm looking at it from my perspective. If I get disabled, I still have kids that are at home, and even though it may be a low probability, I feel like I have to care for my family first before I care for myself.
Yeah. I'd like to segue into the fact that Ted Kennedy years ago started talking about long-term care insurance. And so it is in the new health care reform bill, and it is called CLASS. And CLASS is Community Living Assistance Services and Supports. And I want our listeners to begin to get educated about CLASS. This may be an option for many individuals. Obviously, the long-term care insurance industry is going to probably be working with the government to provide these policies. How it is different is that you must be working, and you must have paid into this program for 5 years. It is going to be a government-sponsored program. There are no health qualifications. You must have worked 3 of the 5 years. And you must have worked. So if you're a disabled individual, you will not get into the CLASS program. The interesting thing, though, that it seems is going to make this program maybe troublesome is that more people who are the sicker people will obviously go into a program like this. And the cost of this, it's supposed to be voluntary. Mm-hmm. It's not supposed to be paid for by the taxpayer. So therefore, everyone who's in this program who can't qualify for long-term care insurance would enter into this program. And I think we're going to find that it's under the Congressional Budget Office, who has determined that it will be fiscally responsible. They're going to find out very quickly that it's not going to be affordable.
Right.
But we don't know yet. Yes. That's still the beginning of a whole new idea.
Well, we appreciate you bringing that to our listeners' attention, Wally. If you could speak to our listeners about the planning for long-term care, what piece of advice could you give them in regards to that?
I think the biggest piece of advice at this point is that you are not ageless boomers, and that we are all going to face, hopefully, long lives. And we wish you long life. How do you plan to pay for it? You need to start taking a good look in the mirror and learn from your parents, the agonies that your parents are going through. You should be learning from them. Those parents that have long-term care insurance, the kids are buying their long-term care insurance. The majority still haven't gotten it yet, and I think that's what I want our listeners to start taking a good look. I give you permission to take care of yourselves. I'm a nurse. I mean, 40 years as a nurse, and those of you who want to have a long life, a good quality of life, and enjoy that right up to that last day, they're going to be a lot happier in the setting that they choose rather than one that they do not want
good,
to be in.
Good. Appreciate that. Dan, for our listeners, if they'd like to contact you and access your expertise, how can they do that?
First, they're welcome to go to my website, which is georgiaelderlaw.net. The word Georgia is spelled out in full. And my phone number is 404-920-0521. Folks are certainly welcome to call me, and I'm glad to chat. And if they need help, glad to help them.
Dan, we appreciate it. Thank you very much for being our guest. Wally, how can they reach you?
They can email me at attynwk@aol.com and say, help, come do a lecture. They can find me at kellmanlaw.com. They can also find me on nolo.com. Go to Georgia. That's find a lawyer, go to Georgia, go to Gwinnett County, and look under elder law is under family law.
Very good. Well, thank you again to both of you for being here today. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. If you haven't listened to the first installment in this series, go out to www.ugeriaradio.com. And listen to it, and you can also listen to this one again by going to the website. And we will be back again on April 28th with another new edition of Ugeria Radio. And remember, if children are our nation's greatest asset, then seniors are our nation's greatest treasure. We'll see you on the 28th.
Ugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and is recorded in the Business Radio X Studios.